Welcome to the Technoid Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Catoon. Today's show is sponsored by Salesforce Essentials. Salesforce Essentials makes it possible to tap into the power of Salesforce to build stronger customer relationships with a combined sales and support CRM for small businesses that is easy to use, set up, and maintain for just $25 per user per month. You can use this small business software, which is built on the world's number one CRM. All you've got to do is go to salesforce.technori.com. Today's guest is Sagar Shah. He's the director of carrier operations at Uber Freight. I'm super excited about this conversation. I talk about it in the show a little bit. I have sort of a portfolio of companies I've invested in, some of which I've invested a lot more than others. I have this like core bullish theory on like four companies, and Uber's one of them. And we get into a little bit about why. But Tesla, Snapchat, roll your eyes, Snapchat, Uber, Peloton. There's something about the business that I just dig. I think the core infrastructure is there. I think they're flywheels in action, and I love them. And obviously, Uber Freight is where we spend our time on the show, but I think it is a testament of how Uber Freight came to be that is why I'm such a bull when it comes to Uber, because I just think that there's a fundamental business operational system that they built their tech platform on. And it enables them to learn and retool and improve and then add another line and then retool and learn and improve and then add another line and then take the first one to a new market and so on and so forth. And this isn't even talking about, you know, we talk about this with Tesla. Tesla is very similar. They've got, you know, the battery thing, which is eventually they'll get right, and But ultimately, they've got the solar thing to get right, the network, the battery network, charging network. There's so many things that they can add on to and disrupt multiple, from energy to travel, transportation, delivery, drive, autonomous driving. It's all these things. Uber's right in the middle of that. They're right there too. And we didn't get into this to show, and I didn't want to ask because, you know, public company and all. But I have this belief that they are building the infrastructure for gig economy. And then they're going to supplement where it makes most sense. We talked about this on a previous show last week about using robots and automation to supplement and support humans. I think that's where Uber's going. I think they end up partnering with Tesla or somebody down the road and literally have the trucks on auto drive, but using the knowledge learned from human drivers. And then eventually it'll be human drivers with automation and sort of helping them. And it's just going to be this like 24-hour work cycle. And you're going to have it in shift work with Uber Works. You're going to have it in Uber Freight. You're going to have it in Uber Eats. You're going to have it in your Uber, as I call it. And this business is just winding up, folks. For all the people out there talking about profitability on this one, I think you're wrong. But that's just me. Hopefully I'm right and you're wrong. I want to give a shout out to my friend over at Second Kitchen, Nick Anastasiades, who just raised another $3 million for their seed round led by our friends at Hyde Park Venture Partners. Nick and those guys, it's kind of coincidental. Nick and those guys at Second Kitchen are in the same kind of space and sphere as the former CEO, founder of Uber, Cloud Kitchen founder, just raised a couple $100 million, $300 million. Travis Kalanick. I don't think this is a coincidence. Smart people doing smart things. This is my conversation with Sagar Shah, the director of carrier operations at Uber Freight. It's not often that you get to have a company that this is like, to me, there's like three companies that I would have, and Tesla would be one of them. Uber would, of course, be another one. And Netflix we had in. That was another one that I'm like bananas over. I think now Disney is one that I'm kind of interested in. There's like the public companies that I'll add another one. Peloton is another one that I'm like, I'm really big behind for a number of reasons. And this is a common theme. So I have you here to talk about obviously Uber Freight. But I think it's a great starting point. Just knowing, just full transparency, folks, I might, you know, be a little drooly on this show because I've invested a significant amount of my money in Uber. And I will preface by saying I got in at the right time. I did not buy at 45. I'm like a $23 a share guy. Maybe a little lower even. And so, there are bulls and bears in the market when it comes to Uber and when it comes to Tesla, when it comes to Peloton, all these things. I am very, very bullish on the core business, on the fact that you guys, in my mind, are a technology platform-enabled logistics business that happens to move people and then move products and then move workers and then move food and then move whatever the hell you want to add to that. And so what say you on this?
Well, first of all, Scott, thank you for having me. Super honored to be here, as well as to have Uber on that short list of companies that you mentioned
earlier. I'm not saying this just because you're on the show. Legit, I have four brands. I've named most of them, but like the main ones, like I'm also bullish on Snapchat. I have like four brands, Snapchat, Peloton, Tesla, and Uber are my brands that I'm hanging on, because I just believe that despite what any economics and things and the profitability problems right now, I don't care about it. I mean, I do care, but like there are certain types of businesses that have been disrupted forever, and you guys are one of them.
Well, if you look at the overall business and the different business units, right? I mean, the rideshare business is the number one player in all the markets in which we operate. Yep. We have Uber Eats, which is the number one food delivery platform globally. Now we have Uber Freight and all these businesses growing together, as well as sharing the benefits of the overall Uber marketplace and the advantages that that can bring. Is certainly super exciting, and I think is one of the reasons why we continue to invest in these different business units as well. Another thing to think about is that Uber is a technology company, but very much playing in this very messy operational world. Yep. And you might have pure tech providers, you might have pure ops providers, but at the end of the day, you really need both. And the real world is messy, and there are problems, and we're very familiar with operating in that world. And that's where we can also bring an advantage with a new business unit like Uber Freight, and combine those resources together.
We were kind of talking about this offline, about the fact that the business of the future, the Porter's Five and the barriers and defense mechanisms that we previously would look for are kind of obsolete, in the sense that like technology is ubiquitous in a lot of places. And so now we're reverting back to the days of experience and operational excellence and things like that. And you can say whatever you want about whether you think Uber does a great job of this or that or the other thing, or any company for that matter. But the reality is, what Uber has to get right in order to exist is the one thing that every other company in all four of the lines of business that you just discussed have to get right or get perfect to even compete, not to exist, to compete. And so if you're already there, excellent operations on one thing and are just scaling to other areas, the competition has a steep learning curve, and that's to say nothing of the network and the brand and the money and all the stuff. So it's just one of those things where, you know, we talked about this before with the Tesla conversation. I like Tesla because the Tesla network, I think it's like having a great offensive line. Like that's how I look at this. I mean, you guys have an outstanding offensive line, and if I was a quarterback, I would love to play behind it.
Yeah, and it even goes back to the way that Uber scaled over in the rideshare business. And when I started here in Chicago managing a few cities, it's really the model that we employed, which is having local teams really understanding the route and uniqueness of all the different cities in which we're operating in. Over time, you can start to see what those different similarities are and start pulling resources around them. But it's really that local presence and being able to solve individual problems that's really allowed that ability to scale. And I think you see other businesses, you know, starting to employ a similar model as well.
So we're going to start pivoting towards Uber Freight here, but I want to bring up one more thing on this, because you're a perfect example and you can speak to it. What I think has been, I'm a big believer, as people who've listened to the show know this, in brand, and that what Apple is doing is beyond incredible to me, that they have changed their business from we sell computers to we sell iTunes and music to we sell laptops and iPads and to we're a phone company to actually we're a watch company. Actually, we're a health company. Now we're a credit card company. You're just a fantastic brand that they can feed stuff to. I mean, they almost bought Tesla. Speaking of them again, they almost bought them and it became a car business. Like, I'm not sure that would have been a great idea, but regardless, I'm a big believer in brand. And what I'm seeing as the only potential downfall of the brand model of business of the future is acquisitions and or implementations of new lines of business without having some sort of relationship to your core business. What I thought was really fascinating when I saw your bio and about Uber and how they've gotten into Freight and Uber Works is that they didn't just go out and buy some rando company in logistics and be like, yeah, you're Uber Freight. They used people who built Uber, yourself included. And so you literally are the culture from before. And when I mean culture, I mean like the business operational culture before, and the experience of how this business is scaled and how the technology works and the infrastructure, et cetera, et cetera. How did you, because I think this is key to the success of Uber long term, how did you take what you learned before and identify how you're going to use it for a new line of business using the quote unquote Uber gray matter? Mm-hmm. And then in that description, please kind of go through what freight is and how it differentiates.
Sure. So you need both, right? And I think the way you see the way we've built freight is really a combination of previous Uber talent who's helped build other business units, such as the rideshare Eats business within Uber. But we also built the freight operations hub in Chicago for a reason, yep. which is this is also a very important part of the country for freight talent. And you have a lot of the freight innovation happening, a lot of the larger brokerages existing here. And we've really combined both of those skill sets and knowledge bases together to build Uber Freight, which is, you know, let's take the institutional tribal knowledge that individuals from the freight industry have, but then let's also make sure we are changing this industry, not falling into old bad habits by bringing in individuals from a different perspective, as well as sharing some of the best practices from what has happened at Uber in terms of growing that as well. I think you see a lot of different similarities. I think in terms of things like pricing and marketplace and developing things real time, there are a lot of learnings that you can translate over from the Uber rideshare business line. And then it's also that combination of the operations and the technology and helping bring those two together to move the industry forward.
Yeah, I mean, I think I mentioned this to you before. We've had, you know, obviously you've got Coyote Logistics, you've got Ecologistics here. Another company I've invested in, but I'm going to say I'm a little disappointed in that one right now, but that's a whole nother story. And then recently on this show, actually, we had the CEO of Hub Group, which is another, I think one of the more interesting stories. You can just download the podcast by following us on Spotify for that. But I guess you mentioned the talent, you show how you understood the inner workings and how a company scales. And that's, I think it's, you know, we've talked about this many times on the show, that the difference between Silicon Valley, a little New York, a little Boston, Chicago is, we still lack a little bit of depth when it comes to repeat founders. And that's kind of why we're not quite as mature as we need to be. And I think the same thing could be said for within companies and startups like yourself. Airbnb is experiencing this right now as their pre-IPO, is that they haven't really perfected their core business enough to where they should be starting new businesses yet. And you guys, I think, pretty much got it figured out. And so now it's like, we can do this once, and then you waited a while, and then you did it again. What do you think is the benefit of all the things you have as a resource or as access for freight, and how will it impact the users of Uber Freight versus those who would use something else?
Yeah, so one is a lot of the engineering and data problems that we need to solve within Uber Freight can very much be either borrowed or shared based on learnings from other business lines at Uber. Yep. Logistics is an incredibly complicated industry. Thinking about the efficiencies of routes for trucks can actually be leveraging similar problems for efficiencies of routes for cars in cities. And how do we think about those data scientists or those engineers and bring them over to this new business line, or at least think about a similar approach in solving those problems? Although another one is the global scale. Uber is a global company. Uber Freight recently launched Europe earlier this year. We launched Canada just about a month ago. And how do we tap into those other local hubs internationally to help get the business started, either in terms of a talent perspective or understanding the local landscape and doing that research to accelerate our growth in new areas?
I completely agree with you on this. I think, there are some companies that, I don't want to like put anyone in a corner here, but it's like they look at the global opportunity and they say to investors or elsewhere, look at this huge opportunity, and they don't quite realize what global means. It's not just capturing India or capturing Europe or capturing Africa or capturing China. It's like doing business in these different places. Like doing business in China is not the same as anywhere, really. Doing business in India, I mean, ask Spotify. It's a whole different world. I mean, it's a whole different price structure. It's a different everything. And the talent understanding and what it costs to go to another country and to hire talent, recruit, and maintain the same general culture and work ethic and ethos and things is just very different. And if you've done this with one line of business successfully, the ability for you to plug and play and lend that over, I just think is just hugely different. And so, in a lot of times when we talk to companies on the show or otherwise about the opportunity globally, I kind of warn them, like, listen, unless your business is quite literally limited in the United States, I would focus on just nailing United States first, because it's not really like necessarily for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a huge differentiator. And then when you get into the conversation about freight, it has to be global or it's useless, literally.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think, you know, certainly it depends market by market. Yep. I think if you look at the freight landscape overall, the U.S. is a huge industry, right? $700 billion industry just within the U.S. So lots of lots of opportunity just within domestically. But if you look at all the other international opportunities, they're all unique in their own ways as well. And I think it's that hybrid of having the global scale and footprint to accelerate your ability to enter these new markets. But you still need to look and see what's unique about Europe, what's unique yeah. about different markets, and tailor your business accordingly.
Well, the other thing is, because it's not your only business, you don't have to scale globally tomorrow. You can set up shop here and establish offices in Europe and offices in India and offices wherever, and be like, all right, we're kind of here, we're testing, we're doing whatever. And then when the infrastructure for Uber is there, I don't know why I keep calling it Uber, but whenever the main Uber, the land ride share Uber business is there, then you could start building on top of it. And then once that it's proven through, what I think is so unique about this, it gets me jazzed about, is this is such a stupid analogy. It reminds me of in undergrad, when I was starting grad school, and I was starting my first business, and I was testing every part of my business through my classes.
Mm-hmm.
Uber reminds me of that, in the sense that it's like we've got this basic concept that like people have time, and we can give them money for a share of their time to help take people somewhere else. Oh, well, if they can do that, then they could probably like carry food. And if they can do that, they could probably carry other stuff. And if they could do that, they're shift workers. They probably could work for a restaurant. Oh, and they could do that. They could work in construction. Oh, if they do that, then they understand logistics. Like every single one of these is like a layer cake. And I just think it's such a smart business model. I wish I could ask Travis if, I don't know if you know this, was that like the original, like was all of these things mapped as the original Uber plan, or was it something that's been going on for...
Certainly evolved over time. I mean, if you remember, Uber started as a black car service, right?
Yep,
and
yep.
This is something to solve the need for transportation in cities that were typically either underserved by public transit, or it was incredibly difficult to get a taxi. And the realization was that there are a lot of black car drivers actually who have significant downtime when they're not, doing airport trips or business trips or whatnot. So let's think about a way to improve the utilization within that community. And then one thing essentially led to another, and the concept of ride sharing was created. But then, this idea of food delivery started based on a lot of, promotions that we were doing in terms of, on-demand food or on-demand events or whatnot. And I think we eventually realized that you can apply this model for the delivery of things as well. And the rest is kind of history from there.
There are not a lot of businesses that are like this. I'd love to learn a little bit about the actual end user here a little, and yep. Who are the target customers, who will use it, who uses it already, and how people will see Uber Freight in their life.
Yeah. So a little context on freight and the overall business in the first place is that, this is Uber for trucking, literally. Yep. And freight is one of those industries that I think oftentimes goes a bit overlooked in terms of the size as well as the importance, right? $700 billion industry, incredibly fragmented, and tons of inefficiencies. A lot of the business is still conducted over the phone or over fax and just entirely manual. So the opportunity that we saw are a few things. One is, how can we improve the efficiency of this business? If you think about air freight and ocean freight, a lot of those have actually improved over time as it comes to efficiencies. Over the road trucking has actually stayed quite flat. And
yep.
That's really the macro trend here that speaks to the opportunity. in terms of our customer base and how we really got started is thinking about the carrier and the drivers in the community. There's increasingly a number of pain points for those carriers and for those drivers as it relates to their time and their ability to utilize their time effectively. In terms of just their treatment and how they've been able to work with others and have transparency into the overall way that they do business. And then lastly, just in terms of the livelihood as well, and you could see a trend in which the driving population is actually aging, and there's an increasing driver shortage that a lot of people are talking about. So how can we think about this macro trend and really provide the opportunity? And when we started Uber Freight, we thought about, you know, those drivers and those smaller carriers that are either independent owner operators or small fleets. Because about 90% of the trucking companies out there have 10 or fewer drivers. So it's a huge long tail of capacity that's oftentimes unaddressed by the larger brokerages or those conducting relationships. Yep.
So do you feel like I'm trying to like figure out a good analogy here, but this is one of those gaps in the market that it's sort of like Accenture has a problem in that they're too expensive, but they're really good, but they're big, but they're not really good, but like they're great at what they do, but like not what necessarily everyone does. And so like small businesses can't work with them, but then small businesses have to work with an agency, but the agency doesn't really have the experience. And so there's like a gap.
Yeah.
And this reminds me a little bit of that, where it's like, the main logistics companies can't really serve these people, and they couldn't really find a way to be profitable doing so because they would lack economies of scale to do so. And so you have the potential economy of scale in the sense that you've got the massive Uber infrastructure. So you're in a position where most are really not to capture this gap.
Yeah.
And then from there you can grow.
That's a great example. And, you know, if you are a logistics company or just a professional, you know, are you going to make a relationship with one large trunking company with 300 trucks, or are you going to make 300 individual relationships with 300 individual drivers, right? And I think you often see companies doing the former because of the efficiencies that come with it. So what we've really built and seeing this opportunity is an app for those independent owner operators and small fleets that they can log on, they can see the freight available to them. They don't have to call in and haggle or negotiate over rates. It's full transparency. It's market-based pricing, quite similar to the way Uber is market-based pricing. And they push a few buttons on the app and then they can book a load. And it really provides them access to freight and customers that they otherwise wouldn't have access to based on the relationships that they hold otherwise.
I'm assuming here, obviously, that all these people are licensed and blah, 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 like all the back and blah, just blah, 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 like the safety stuff. No big deal.
We go through all safety checks at the time of onboarding. So there are a lot of sources like the FMCSA, SaferWatch, other available data that we can actually look at to see what safety data is, accident data, business licensing, to make sure that everybody's qualified and meets those thresholds before bringing them into the Uber network.
Yeah, because I'm looking at this and I'm just thinking, like, from a small business standpoint, you know, a lot of times when we look at from the VC standpoint, we're always talking about looking for companies that are staying in their lane, and they stay on the focused on the things that are their like core competency. And with SMBs, particularly those in the hardware product movement things, their core competency is usually, if it's a service provider or it's a product that they build and they manufacture or whatever the case may be, logistics is not exactly like, usually they hire in a CFO and somebody else who's like really, you know, like a, you know, what is, why am I, I'm blanking, whatever, blanking on the guy from Echo, but they bring a person in who has this very clear experience on how to build logistics. But if you're an SMB, you usually can't really afford that. And so you sort of just eliminate, like, right off the top, like, we'll take care of that problem for you.
Yeah, and it's actually on both sides of the carrier and the shipper. So on the carrier side, you're exactly right, in which you might be the driver of the truck and you might be the owner of the business, and we see that happen a lot. And or you might be the driver of the truck and also the dispatcher for two or three other trucks that you have in your network. And what you end up seeing is a large part of the time is spent actually looking for business, being on the phone with various logistics companies or brokerages trying to keep your trucks full. And a big part of this is reducing that time spent of planning out your next day or next week by just opening up Appen app and clicking a few buttons. Actually, 30% of our volume that we see booked through the app is after normal business hours, is after 5 p.m. and before 6 a.m. the next day, which just goes to show that a lot of these users are actually
scrambling,
you know, at home late at night, just kind of on their phone, yep, picking up their next day, rather than having to pick up a phone during business hours and wait for somebody to be in the office at the other end of that.
How long have you guys been rolling a public?
So we launched Uber Freight in early 2017.
Okay.
And we've been growing the business ever since. We started, you know, in certain regions just with traditional dry van freight, and we've expanded throughout the greater continental US, as well as Canada, and as well as Europe, and now hauling dry van, refrigerated freight. We just got into flatbed. So continuing to expand geographically, as well as in terms of service lines.
And so right now, can you quote on some of the business, like size, volume of market you guys are operating?
Yep. So we actually have been able to, you know, we're among the fastest growing business units within, yeah, Uber now. You know, we actually broke out the Uber Freight business within, you know, our recent quarterly financials as well. So it's available there as well. But I think what's been exciting is we, you know, have over 40,000 carriers in our network now.
Wow.
And over 10,000, you know, shippers in our network, many of which are within that Fortune 500 business segment as well. So continue to grow and continue to
in
scale.
2 years. That's huge. That's insane. So what do you think you have to get right continually to make this thing, like, before you feel like this is like the Uber, as I say?
You know, I think it's really continuing to listen to our customers and our users. And a large part of what we built Uber Freight upon in the first place is, again, that driver and that carrier community, understanding and listening to those problems. And we certainly can't lose that as we continue to grow this business, both from the carrier perspective as well as the shipper perspective also. And I think what we've learned in the carrier side, we've actually brought over to the shipper side as well. We've recently launched, you know, an SMB product called the Shipper Platform, which is tailored to those small SMB businesses as well, in which the CEO is also the one booking freight for the company, and it's not necessarily their core competency. So how can we make that as easy as possible for them? So, you know, we need to continue to listen to our customers as well as share learnings across the organization.
So I have to ask you, as a person who worked across now a couple of lines of business in Uber, what is the competitive nature of, I work for Uber, but I'm Uber Freight versus Uber Works versus Uber Eats? Like, there has to be some sort of line of, like, one of us is going to reign supreme.
Yeah, I think, you know, every new business unit within Uber has that exponential growth with it. And I think, well, that's one of the most exciting parts about working at this company. And one of the things that's kept me at Uber for a while now is that we're continually innovating in terms of new business lines, you know, started with rideshare, then Eats, Freight. We're getting into, you know, self-driving. We're getting into Uber Elevate, which is sort of air taxis, yep, and thinking about that. And that is really what I think is interesting, and continue to see how these businesses work together, but also how we can take previous learnings and apply them to the future.
Very cool. This has been a lot of fun having you on here.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Obviously, people can go and download the Uber app. I mean, that's like the starting point. Where do businesses go to sign up for Uber Freight?
Yeah, uberfreight.com. There are prompts for both carrier and shipper. You can sign up for either one, and you'll go through the steps.
Sweet. To answer any of your startup questions, DM me on Instagram at Technori or at Katoon. To apply to pitch on the Startup Showcase live on WGN Radio, go to technori.com. Boom, that's a wrap.